Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of May 7th. Golden Week is over, and it's just regular old days. Every day.
Runner-up weeks.
Runner-up weeks. Okay. Well.
Yeah, the loser weeks. You know, if you follow that
I'm
one.
I'm not
the,
losing.
You know, only the winners.
I'm not losing. I refuse to lose. Anyway, with me late on a Saturday night is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy? You're not losing, I know.
I'm good. I'm holding out for a tie. You know, I see the 12th inning coming up. I think I'm going to make it.
You're just trying to hold on. Don't give up a run. Let's just get out of here. Let's escape, he says.
That's right. All right. Let's sell. I'm looking forward to celebrating at the top of the 12th.
Well, at this time of night, yeah, so am I. It is about okay. The top of the 12th right now. So on this week's show, we've got a chat with Vladimir Coco Ballantine of Yakult. We're going to discuss the Swallows, look at some numbers, look at some statistics, talk about Seiichi Uchikawa and his 2,000 hits, among other topics, and handle some high heat about Ichiro Suzuki. Man, we're going to have to add more bases to the field. We got so much to talk about. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so Coco Ballantine, the Curacao Crusher, as he was once known, formerly...
Oh, really?
Yeah, remember, I think I tried to...
Was he doing, like, professional wrestling in the off-season or something?
Sounds like he should have a mask and a gut hanging out of something. Yeah, you're right. But,
Man, stop with the images.
Long time ago, I thought of that nickname when he was hitting home runs, and then I saw it somewhere on the internet back in, I think it was 2012, and then the next year he hit 60 in 2013. So speaking of which, he broke Sadaharu O's single season home run record in 2013 when he hit 60 home runs, and he has hit at least 30 in every season except for 2015 when he was injured. And Coco came from the Seattle Mariners and spent some time in the Reds organization before coming to Japan in 2011. And as you'll hear late in the chat here, he speaks a number of languages. He's the language master. So we do forgive him in the chat for calling former skipper Mitsuru Manaka Tanaka. But he speaks so many languages, and it's a process of... I always say we really appreciate these guys sitting down with us and speaking in another language. And he does a lot of his... He does his interviews in English. He does a lot. And he could do probably a couple other languages, but you'll hear him speak in his native language. So let's go ahead and take a listen. All right, I'm sitting down with Coco Ballantine in the dugout at Tokyo Dome. How you doing, man?
Doing good, man. Good, my friend.
I loved it. I love the hair.
Yeah, I just tried to get something new, you know. New look. See, we get a new season, new look, maybe a new result. You never know.
I know you've been here. You've been successful a long time, but this team only one time has gone to the Japan Series. What's up with that?
Well, it's a process, man. I mean, we be playing, you know, lately with a lot of injured player, but this year at least all the hitters are healthy, but we still missing some pitchers. So it's just about, you know, just hopefully timing. I mean, everybody at the same page and healthy. I think we can be a good team.
All right, how are you physically?
Good, man. I think I haven't felt this good in a while. Since I've been here, I mean, healthy, I feel great.
All right, how have you changed as a player? Because you had that 60 home run season, and I think a lot of people expected, you know, let's see Coco hit 40, let's see Coco hit 50, and you haven't been able to do that. So how have you changed as a player since then?
Yeah, I haven't changed as a player. I've been same player my whole career. I mean, it's just adjusting yourself to the way things going, you know. Back then when I hit the 60 homers, I mean, everybody can see that the pitcher was challenged, and it was, you know, it was just go right at you, you hit me, or I get you out. But since then, I mean, I guess all those home runs are still in the back of their head, and it has been tough lately as a hitter. I mean, being my situation, because nobody want to give a homer, so they changed the whole approach. So I just have to adjust myself And it will be hard to hit 60 again because pitchers don't just gonna throw it right there and let you hit it, you know. So at least I've just been consistent, hitting 30 every year. That's something that, as a player, it's as a power hitter, it's a big goal to achieve every year.
All right, now I remember you talking to me about trying to lay off and stay away from pitches down outside of the zone. And it seems now that they're pitching a little bit differently and that they're pitching you up in the zone.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, it's all about adjustments. Like, we check the pitchers check the hitters. I've been working a lot to not be swinging on all those pitches down in the zone. So now they try to come up in the zone. As a power hitter, every time you see a ball right in your eyes, you think you can hit it so far, but really, it's a ball, and you won't be able to see it. It's just because it's on your eye level, you see it so big. But, I mean, it's tough. It's tough, too, to lay off of those pitches. But, I mean, pitchers won't be consistent throwing it up there than they can be throwing it downstairs. So I think that's better for me as a hitter if they try to just come up on the zone.
Okay. Now, you had manager Mitsuru Manaka in that situation last year, and then you got Junji Ogawa coming back as the manager. So how has this whole managerial situation been the last 2 years?
Well, you know, it doesn't make big difference for me as a player because Ogawa been my manager for my first three or four years, I think, before they changed it. And we have a great relationship as a player and manager. So to have him back, I mean, it wasn't any you know, big deal for me as that part of having a new manager. And about Tanaka, I mean, he's a great manager too. I mean, just haven't been in a good situation after we win everything because everybody was hurt. So it wasn't his fault, but I mean, that's how things go. I mean, now we have Ogawa, we just gotta, you know, continue to fight.
Well, he looks really relaxed on Pro Yaku News doing TV, so he doesn't have the stress anymore. Now, what about Takuro Ishii coming over as a coach? How has that been for the team?
It's doing good, man. I mean, he's a legend. 2,000 hits in this league, a great hitter, and now he's been working with Hiroshima, and you see the process that Hiroshima hitters have since then. And to have him in our group, I mean, I think it make a big difference now. I mean, we have a good relationship. He had good work plan. We work good together in the camp and everything. And I just continue to, you know, work with him, and hopefully things can turn around, and we all as a hitter can process like. You know, we're supposed to do.
Yeah, it looks like some of the younger guys are doing better than we expected them to do, or we didn't. I mean, they're doing better than I expected them to do. Do you credit him, or do you credit Shinya Miyamoto, your ex-teammate, coming back as a coach? Who gets the credit there?
I mean, you got to give the credit to both of them. I mean, it's a team play, you know. When something go well, everybody get the credit, and when something go wrong, you know, always they look to blame someone for that. But in this situation, things going well, I mean, you got to give the credit to everybody. It's a team player.
All right, now the Central League is pretty tough, and I like line drive hitters for Jingu as the park. I said it last year, I think if you have a lot of line drive hitters in that park, that the scoring will go up. What do you think about guys like Hiroka and Nishiura and some of the other young guys playing in that lineup?
Yeah, I mean, those guys are the future from the future, you know. Hiroka, he's a great kid. He's a great player. He had a 20 home run potential, maybe more.
20? Okay.
Maybe more. I mean, he's still young. He's 20 years old. I mean, he still have to grow and you know. But I think he's a future. He's a great player. He will be great if you continue to work the way it's supposed to work. Same as Nishiura. We have Yamada that have to continue to do what he's doing. I mean, we have a lot of young guys, man, that, you know, when the time comes for us to step down, they will be, you know, ready to take over.
Well, I'd like to see more power in the lineup, though. Not so many guys who, you know, are little singles hitters.
Yeah, I mean, we have some power. I mean, it doesn't matter of how they use it. I mean, those guys all have power, but, you know, they working on line drive, try to make contact. You know, as a Japanese Japanese baseball, they want you to hit contact. But I think with the time and the hitting coach that we have right now, they focus more on hit the ball hard and swing the bat and just don't try to contact. So I think if those guys continue to work like that, and it will take time for them to carry on in the game, but by the time they carry on to the game, then they will feel more comfortable hitting, swinging the bat in the game and just try to make contact, and everybody will see the difference. Because like you said, Jingu is a small park. You don't have to have a lot of power to hit a homer. So I think they just need to swing the bat, and a lot of good things can happen.
All right, good. Now, you got Norichika Aoki, who came back from the States this year. How has he impacted the lineup?
I mean, to have a veteran player like him back with us in the lineup, because lately, you know, we have a lot of young boy playing. Even, you know, Kawabata Yamada, they start, but they still young, you know.
Mm.
And maybe I'm the only probably older player out there, but it's
well,
not...
you got Sakaguchi and Yuhei Takai. Those guys are not young.
Yeah,
over 30s.
yeah. But I mean, you know, like with experience, like the major league experience and the MPB experience, you know. But I'm not Japanese, so to have him as a Japanese with the MLB experience and the Japanese experience, it's great, because he can help all those players, and those players will listen to him, because he's older, like they say, he's a senpai here, and he has the major league experience. So, and he's a great hitter, 2,000 hits in this league. So I think it's a big different, mental change for the young player to have him on the, back on the team.
Okay. Now, I know Sakaguchi's played some first base. I know they worked you out at first base a little bit. Any chance we see you at first base some more this year or next year?
Nah, man. I mean, you know, I love to. I mean, it will take some pressure on my legs, you know. But, man, I feel good out there, man. But this time of my career, I don't want to be too much stressful when I'm playing defense. So I think I'm just gonna, you know, continue to play out there, and hopefully Center League get some DH so I can DH.
All right, man, one more question before we go. Now, how many languages do you speak? I think you got Papiamento, Dutch, English,
Spanish,
some Japanese. What else you got going?
That's all I got right there, man.
All right, well, say, how about Papiamento, and say thank you for listening.
Botakinang ko ko Valentin, daan ki pati na entrevista di mi, anto sige apoyami.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot, Coco.
Yeah, way cool. I like that. Thanks for the kind words, I think. I wasn't saying get lost and don't bother me again. It sounded good.
You know, when I asked him, I said, hey, man, I said, what did you say, man? You went on forever. But I guess it's...
He was saying bye. They say bye in Papiamento.
All right. So I love the DH comment and other things, but what rolled around in your head after you listened to that?
Well, a couple of things. I love that. You know, it's the process. You know, he's, as you said before, it's a process. You know, it's kind of like his hair. You know, it's going from point A to point B, and we don't know what's, you know, whether we're seeing the finished product or it's going to get, you know, there's going to be another evolution in here.
Yeah.
And that's really
Let me help you out with that. It's going from point A to point G or H or something, and all points in between, because if it were just point A and point B, we could see the end.
Well, you can only see the end if you're looking for the end. Okay. Okay, but I enjoyed that, and I, of course, you know, and I hear the Swallow, you know, when I hear this, and I'll bet, you know, we do have listeners who are Swallows fans, or at least, let's put it this way, we have listeners who claim to be Swallows fans and then claim to have heard something on the podcast, so I'll just assume that those two intersect, and when he said, "I don't want to be too stressful playing defense," I can hear those people going, "Right on! We don't want to be too stressed. We don't want to be too stressed out when you're playing defense, neither." And it's not, and I don't mean to, and I kid, and I love you, Coco, and I know you give, you know, you're always out there giving your best, but you know, like, there's only so much. There's, you know, your legs are pretty battered, your knees are pretty battered, and you've had tough, you know, Achilles tendon issues and hamstring issues, and you know, it ain't easy going out there doing that. It is. I mean, I'm, you know, I'm relaxing here, and you know, we making a podcast is kind of like the opposite of going out and playing left field every day or playing any position where you've got to be out there and physically active. I mean, I come in, I sit down, make my notes, do the podcast. Okay, good. Are you fit enough to do the podcast? Well, gee, yeah, I'm not fit at all, but I'm good enough for the podcast, and it's not like that. So he's got to go out and play when he's not well.
You got to get in on the editing part then, you know, buddy.
True enough. Let's you know, let's, I think it's time to clear up, but before we go any further, it's time to clear up a common misconception. This is not my podcast. John's the star. I'm the guest host. I'm the guy who's there to supply. Basically, John comes up with like 95% of the ideas, and I go, that sounds funny to me. You know, I sit here and react. It's kind of like my Twitter feed those of my Twitter followers. You know, people say stuff and I go, oh yeah, that doesn't make sense. That's my job. So this is John's deal, and he does the editing. He does all the grunt work. He does all the hard work. So all credit to him. Nah. All credit to Coco for going out and playing defense. And that's what I wanted to say about Coco's interview.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say 95%. And plus, having an idea and making it into something tangible and making it into a program takes more than one person. So, yeah, you know, we work on it.
Thank you, Michael.
We work on it together. So thank you, Michael, as well. You don't know how Michael has helped in the past 3 weeks either, let me tell you. But anyway, yeah, that was one of the things that stuck out for me, too, was him talking about the defensive side. And, you know, when he said he'd be happy if there were a DH in the Central League, it told me two things. At first I laughed and I thought, oh, okay, this is Coco saying he wants to take a break. But it told me two things. Even though he's probably still a better defensive player than Zoilo Almonte of the Chunichi Dragons, he's not ultra confident with the glove anymore. Remember when he first came to Japan, he was ultra confident with the glove and the arm, liked to show off that arm a lot. But obviously he has aged a little bit. And, you know, the injuries have taken a toll. I don't know about battered and all that other stuff. He's moving okay out there in the outfield. He's making all the plays that he needs to make. I mean,
yeah, but when you lose that leg strength, you know, the arms go. Arms
you
definitely
plant,
go.
Yeah, then it's hard to do it all with the shoulder. But the other thing was that he loves this team. You know, if he didn't say, I want to go somewhere where they have a DH. He said, I hope that DH comes to the Central League, which tells me he wants to stay. You know, it has to be frustrating to be with the Swallows for this long. He came in 2011, and since 2009, the Swallows have had a first place finish, a second place finish, and two-thirds for four CLCS appearances and one Japan Series appearance, which they lost, so no titles. But, you know, he's a three-time home run king. I think he enjoys the lifestyle living in Tokyo. I think he likes this team. I think he wants to stay. He set that, like we said, the single-season homer record here. He wants to be with this team. He wants to help turn things around and help it win. So that's what that comment told me. I laughed, but then I thought, okay, well, this makes sense. And then Yeah, I talked to him on Saturday. It was April 28th when we sat down for this interview, and he has 9 home runs, I think, altogether. But he hit 6 this week after we chatted, so I think he's starting to heat up. It's just like he said in the chat, that when he hit all those home runs in 2013, the pitchers were challenging him, and they were saying, "Okay, well, we're gonna go after him," but I don't know what process the Swallows are on. I don't know and I understand that the notion of getting these young players some reps and getting them a lot of swings and getting them used to not only the failure but to making the adjustments when they fail, and that's how you get better. So I understand the whole thing, but I don't understand the process here. So I should have asked him, you know, what part of this process, but the interview went over 10 minutes anyway, so I didn't. But maybe next time I ask him what the process is, and maybe that's just it, is getting these young guys used to the idea of coming out for a whole season and contributing, not just, you know, half a season, or how to stay healthy, or whatever it is that they're processing here. So those are the things that stood out for me. But yeah, I love him, and he said, even at the beginning, he said, "It's good to see you, my friend." And, you know, I haven't gone to see him in spring training ever. And so when I finally get a chance to see them and him and chat for a while and hang out, it was a really fun time. Obviously, we did this more than a week ago by the time you guys will hear it. So I didn't ask any questions that were involving a time frame. But talking about the Swallows now, they finally beat the Dragons on Thursday, and that was the first time they had beaten the lowly Dragons this year. Stopped a skid against them at 5. Coco hit 2 home runs in that game. But when I did this interview, I talked to Matt Caracitti for about 40 minutes before the game. He's now down on the farm. I talked to him for a while. I talked to Takuro Ishii as well. And I asked Ishii about the young hitters. And I said, what are you trying to do with these young hitters? And what kinds of things do you try to correct or help them with? And he said, "Man, if I started telling you about all that stuff, I would be talking here all day." So maybe that's the process.
Well, I think the process with him is to make things short, because that's the treatment I get. That's a long question. You mind if I don't answer it? that's a little more... Do you really want to hear this? No. Okay, I didn't think so.
Oh, okay. No, I've talked to him a few times, and this time, he did most of the talking. I just asked a couple questions, and he did most of the talking. So we talked for about 5 minutes. Mm. And one thing I asked him was about Norichika Aoki, who actually got hit by a pitch today. I think it was on his knee or near his knee, and was taken out of the game. And they said nothing was broken, no structural damage, so we'll have to see how much time he actually misses. But he got hit on Saturday. But I asked him about Aoki's adjustment coming back to Japan, and he said, well, the first thing is, he said, the ball moves differently from the way it moves on the breaking pitches in the States. So he's trying to get, mm-hmm. he's trying to readjust to that or come back. And then there are a number of new pitchers he has never seen before, but you know, you've seen sometimes, mm-hmm. in some sense, you've seen one Japanese pitcher, you've seen, you know, you've seen 2/3 of them, and he just has to get used to that. And then he did say that he just has to get used to the style of seeing any kind of pitch in any count, where he can't sit on fastballs. And those are the adjustments he's been talking about making with Aoki. But he thinks his consistency is really going to add to these kids and or help them be a good role model for these kids in terms of preparation for games. And that was a big deal. That was a big deal that he said.
Well, I think so. We have different views about where the Swallows are going. I don't think we have different views about the overall, I guess, how can I put this? We're seeing the same team, but we're seeing different, you know, we're taking different measures of it, or we're getting different evaluations of it, John and I. And I see this team as a team that's doing actually, well, he said remarkably well. I guess that's an accurate description from you.
Mm-mm. That's not what I...
they're not remarkable.
I don't think they're doing well at all. I'm amazed that they're 11-18 as we sit now, and they have a much better record than the Rakuten Eagles, whom I thought would win a lot more games.
Well, that's more of a statement about how bad the Eagles are.
Well, they have 11 wins. I think the Eagles have 7, but so they're close. But I think before we started taping, my comment was, I don't know how they've gotten these 11 wins. To be honest, they're scoring runs, but what I'm seeing in the rotation, especially on the mound in general, I'm seeing a really good David Buchanan, who tossed his first shutout on Friday to beat the Carp 8-0. And then you've got David Huff, who got hit on the leg the other day when he was pitching and had to come out as a precaution, but I think he's going to be back and he's going to be fine. And then you've got Chop Liver in the rest of the rotation. You've got Masanori Ishikawa, you've got Judy Hara, Yoshinori Sato on occasion, Shohei Tateyama, who also was sent down to the farm. There's just a motley crew. They're like grasping at straws at the very back just to send guys out there to take some innings, but they have a bunch of relievers who've thrown a bunch of innings. A couple of them have thrown more innings than Tateyama as a starter. So I just I don't think that's a I don't want to set you off again like I did last week, and we'll get to that later. But I don't see that as a sustainable formula to get through a season and you know, win more than 60 games. I just can't see it, and that's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at the fact that they're throwing a bunch of guys out on the mounds just to eat innings, no matter how many runs they give up, because they just need guys to get through the games. So
well, that's certainly true.
You
do need the guys to get through the game.
thank
but
you.
But I think, John said something accurate, and not like he doesn't all the time.
Don't be smarmy. But, not at this hour of the night. Don't do it.
I'm not being smarmy. The fact is, as human beings, we're limited in, you know, the number of things we actually know about how things work is pretty gosh darn small. Mm-hmm. Everything else is just looks like it. I'll tell you, the Swallows do some things fairly well. They do a lot of things fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, pitching ain't one of them. And the fact that, and this has always been a problem for the Swallows, and it's a problem for the, historically been a problem for the Bay Stars. There's two things going on here. One is, it's hard to develop pitchers in a park that punishes every mistake.
Just about, yeah.
So teams, yeah. So if you have a really good defense, which the Swallows' defense is not as good as it was a few years ago. The first year Monaco was there as manager, it was first rate, and that was unfortunately they have not been able to maintain that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably through injuries as much as anything. They were fairly healthy that year. Okay, so that's one thing. And then playing at Jingu kills them because it's just a tremendous hitter's park. So they do have problems developing the pitchers. Now, when they get them, the flip side of that is the pitchers tend to be a lot better than people think they are, and the hitters tend to be not as good. But in this case, the Swallows hitters are actually okay. I think they're not as good as people think, but they're not bad either. The pitching, I think, is not as bad as people think it is, but the park makes it look a little worse. But you know, again, the question is: Are the young pitchers developing? Is there a plan? I don't know if there's a plan or not. I would like to think so. I know the team did develop a bit under Junji Ogawa the first time. Basically, he tried to make them winners with what they had, and he was fairly successful at that for about 3 years. But that's because they had bitten the bullet in the 3 years before that under Shigeru Takada.
Right.
you know, they basically, he came in with a mission that we're going to build up the defense, the pitching and the defense, and all you old people and slow people just go out to Tota Koan, where our minor league team is, and practice being old and slow out there.
Okay.
Because we don't need you in here. So anyway, so they worked on developing all that. Then Ogawa came in, and he said, okay, well, everybody who, if you can hit, we want you, because we got a good defense and we got good pitching. And the team just went, wow, boom. So right now they're a little stuck, but they are making some offensive development. They are getting some guys healthy. Coco said everybody's healthy. I'm not buying that, because if my buddy Tomotaka Sakaguchi is playing first base, it tells you everybody is not healthy.
Or maybe they just want him in
there.
You're talking about Kazuhiro.
Maybe they just wanted a guy who... Yeah, maybe they just wanted a 34-year-old fast outfielder who doesn't hit a lot playing first base. Maybe that's part of the plan. I don't know.
He's hitting a lot this year.
Maybe. Well, okay. Fair enough. But, that's a long story. I'm not going to go into it. But anyway, yeah. So I'm brighter on their prospects than John is. But and I will tell you that the hits that, you know, for example, the hits and home runs they've made, the things they've done on the field and the things opponents have done on the field are very, very close. They're very, very close. I think they've been unfortunate in two ways. They should have scored more runs than they have. They should have allowed fewer runs than they have. And they should have, given the number of runs they have actually scored and allowed, they should have won more games than they have. So those things all put together, I think the Swallows are actually there's more to that iceberg than appears above the surface of the water. But, you know, I'm not saying they're a championship team, but I'm also saying that they're not as bad as their record.
And I'm saying that, you know, you...
And John's saying, and you're saying they're worse than their record.
Yeah, I'm saying once you get through Buchanan and Huff, and if mm-hmm. we even throw Ishikawa in there, and I'm really not...
I wouldn't they don't throw win, Ishikawa they don't, anywhere.
Then they don't win many of those not games. Either. They don't. They usually lose
okay. Maybe
at least one out of three. A lot of times they've lost all three. With the back half of the rotation, I basically think when you talk about the front half of the rotation, you can anticipate keeping staying in the game, but once you get to the back of the rotation, all bets are off. You just really don't know what you're going to get, and I don't think the giving up of runs is as random as you might think. I think it's quite predictable, and based on that, I think they, considering they are under 500, I still think they're overperforming with the back end of that rotation at times. But they're going to get a guy like Tomoya Hoshi. I heard he was throwing on the farm, and he might come back. He's a hard-throwing right-hander, and that could help. And if he can give him some innings and stabilize that rotation, then that makes a difference. But I do think that they're actually overachieving at the moment. But that's how I see it.
Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, I certainly see. I mean, we were talking about this before the show, and I brought out the idea that, you know, if you have a team, let's say you have two teams, one of them scores 6 runs a game on average,
right?
And you know, sometimes they score, you know, as often as they score 5, they score 7. You know, as often as they score 3, they score 9. And you have another team that scores 4 runs every single game. Well, the team that scores 4 runs every single game is probably going to win as many or perhaps even more games, just because it's, you know, they're never going to be shut out. You know, they're not going to lose any games 1-0. You know, they'll lose some 5-4 games and they'll lose some 6-4 games, but every time their opponents, who are more random, you know, and that's what, and the Swallows are the, you know, they're extreme. Now, I'm not saying it's random, but I'm saying that there are games in which the variation of their runs allowed is what you're saying is that the variation of their runs allowed is higher than normal.
Right, they're just not competitive.
Because they have holes in their rotation.
Right, they're not as competitive.
They're not as...
In those other three games.
Swaps.
Right.
Okay. Well, Yes, I think that's a fair assumption, but again,
assumption. I'm looking at the numbers. Yeah, they're losing most of those games.
Well, that's an assumption. That's okay. You're looking at things that have happened. Let's not confuse performance with ability.
I didn't say anything about ability. I said results.
No, that's what I'm saying. Right. So that's what's happened. That's like saying, you know, a guy who hits 300 is a 300, you know, is capable of hitting, can be expected to hit 300. So you said those are the results they had, but I don't, what I'm saying is you can't actually assume that those are going to be the results that are going to continue in that respect, because that's their true ability.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
What makes sense to me is that I cannot predict the future, but what I'm basing my prediction on is the fact that I don't see anything.
Fair enough.
I don't see anything coming up that's going to be better, except, you know, a couple guys here and there. So I'm expecting it to get worse.
Right.
Is what I'm saying.
Well, I see it as the Swallows are underperforming because I see the total numbers. I see a lot of things that they do right. I see some issue. You know, obviously there are some issues. I wish their defense was a heck of a lot better. I wish they had the best defense in NPB, but they don't. Their park doesn't help. I wish they had, you know, typically teams that play in big hitters' parks like the Swallows or the Bay Stars actually tend to have better pitching than offense, because the teams will replace their pitchers more often.
Mm.
Because, you know, they see, you know, if the park is raising your ERA by a run, they're not going to keep anybody who has a bad ERA is going to be obviously way out of, you know, he's going to get fired. Anybody who's got an ERA of 5, which is good and which is not bad in Yokohama, is going to lose his job. They're going to keep hiring guys who have only slightly above average ERAs, which means the team's going to be pretty good. This has been typically the Bay Stars have actually had pretty good pitching. It's been the offense that's been so bad, because they think the guys who are hitting 300, you know, with 10 home runs and, you know, 50 RBIs, they think these guys are good hitters when they're way below average.
Okay.
And they build a team that's based on, you know, inflated, what I can say, they inflate their opinions of their hitters and they deflate their opinions of the pitchers.
It's a bad combination to start.
That's typical.
A team. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's typical. It's been called the devil's advocate theory of park effects. You know, pitchers' parks breed teams like the Dragons of 10 years ago breed teams that have not really great pitching but great hitting.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to move on.
And people think, but people think the opposite. Okay. Anyway, so I'd like to see that happen, but the Swallows' defense is not that good, and the pitching is really not that good either, but it could get, you know, I'm more optimistic about it than John is.
Probably so. All right, let's make a four-seam transition. Now, last week, we did touch on something that actually you sent some snipes my way on Twitter I'm not sure that you totally understood what I said, but I made a comment on the air, on the show last week about 4-plus ERA.
I listened.
And what I said was it's not a successful formula for beating good teams in the second half of the season if you have a 4-plus ERA. So you looked up the teams that have had a 4-plus ERA and still won a league championship.
Hold on.
Slow down, he says.
Okay, yeah. So first of all, these are two different issues because there were two different statements. And the first one was the one you just said, which was it's not a successful formula for beating good teams in the end of the season, which I just think is
in the second half of the season.
In the second half of the season, which is just one of those things that people throw out there without having any evidence. So we'll just forget that one and move on to the next one, which is teams with how many, you know, do teams with 4-point ERA. When you were defending that statement, you said, well, how many teams with 4.0 ERAs win pennants? And the answer is not very often.
Okay, yeah, you're separating them, but I'm saying that if your team has a 4-plus ERA and you're trying to beat good teams in the second half, that's not a successful formula. I don't see how
those are two different things.
Well, they're different, but it's the same. It's the same notion of your ERA is too high, you're giving up too many runs.
First of all, What difference does it make? I'm picking nits here. I see one right in front of me, so I'm going to pick at it.
Get your hand out of your nose.
Get out of here, nits.
Get your hand out of your nose, nits. Jim Allen.
I didn't say the B word or the S word. I said nits.
Okay.
So anyway, what I'm saying is, for example, what difference does it make whether the good team you're beating the team in the first half of the season or the second half of the season? A win's a win.
Okay.
It doesn't. It's just, you know, but you said this off the cuff. It wasn't a prepared statement. So we'll cut some slack. But my point is, there's no, unless you're going to go and look at how often teams with with ERAs like the Cebu Lions actually beat teams in the second half of the season over the last, you know, however much you have the data for, this really, it's basically an unprovable assertion.
Okay.
So I just wanted to get rid of that and move on to something that is. And when we, you know, and then you moved on to the one. Well, it is. I mean, I want to see where, you know, it's like this one, you know, it's like when somebody says what you do in the fourth period matters, and people say, you know, it's something that TV announcers say. And as I said, it's not a scripted remark. And I do not want to. And when I say TV announcers say it, I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean that completely in a bad way. What I mean is that they're under a time constraint. They're having to be spontaneous. And sometimes when you're being spontaneous, you say things that aren't always.
Thank you for giving me a soft cushion to land on. But I'm fine,
no, but
I'm
that's
fine
true.
With the
I mean,
state
you,
because
you,
I don't think that teams that give up a lot of runs. Now, whether it's in the first half of
you
this.
You don't think so, but you don't know it.
No, but I
you
mean,
don't know it. You can't prove
what
it.
What I know is teams that. That finish, and you're saying that they're different, but I'm just looking at teams that have a 4+ ERA, and I couldn't remember one that had won. I didn't even. You said the last one to do it was the 2001 King Tetsu Buffaloes, who were at 4.
No, I didn't say that.
You tweeted that. That's what the tweet said. And you said they were 4.98 when they won the PL in 2001, and I thought okay, and. But I think that just proves the fact that you said you found in total six teams that since the beginning of Japanese baseball or since 1950 or for whatever.
Yeah, so
that's a losing formula.
It's fairly uncommon.
Right, that's a losing formula.
Well,
it's not a formula for success to have. Now, whether you're giving up to good teams or bad teams or in the first half or the second half.
That is. If the only part, yes, no, but my point was this. We have to, and I think this is where we have to separate. If you've got a team that's scoring 8 runs a game and your team's allowing 4 runs a game, that is a formula for success.
Obviously.
But what you're saying, but your point was you can't, it's not a formula for success if you're giving up 4 runs a game. And I'm saying it's only, you know, I want to reach the compromise here. If you're scoring an average number of runs or a slightly above average number of runs, 4.0 is not going to cut it. Absolutely right. But we're talking about the Cebu Lions. I mean, these are the teams that have won pennants.
Okay.
The 1985 Hanshin. It's only six of them. Give me a break.
Yeah.
1985 Hanshin Tigers. Okay. Just incredible boomers. 2000. Fukuoka Daiei Hawks, incredible boomers. 1980 Kintetsu Buffaloes. Well, that's two teams in 1980 and 1978. They were playing with juiced balls, and so everybody was scoring a zillion runs. No, not really relevant. You know, those were low ERAs then. The 2001 Kintetsu Buffaloes, hitters park, playing with juiced baseballs. 2004 Hawks, again, Iguchi and Joji Mun, Matsunaka, that crowd. So, you know, it does happen.
Okay.
It's not common, but it does happen.
I mean,
but I'm saying it's
50,
okay.
60, 70 years, that's not a formula for success. That's a formula for losing if only six teams have done it. But here's the thing is I didn't say it was impossible. I didn't say there was no way. And I didn't even poo-poo the notion that the Sabre Lions could do it. I said, if that's the plan, that's not a winning formula. That's all I said.
It is if It is if you can score eight runs.
And I didn't. Well, I mean, we're not looking at.
We're not looking at the offense,
and I don't. I'm not worried about the offense because the offense.
You said if you're allowing four runs a game is not a successful formula. It is a successful formula. It is one of the many successful formulas, and you're saying it can't happen. And I'm just saying that's ridiculous.
Can't happen. I didn't say impossible.
As soon as you say it isn't one of the successful formulas, you're saying it cannot happen.
You said it is not a successful formula. That's fine. I want to move on because we got so much more to talk about. But that was interesting.
Okay, let's go.
So you found six teams in 70 plus years. Okay, let's.
I just had to laugh. Okay, go ahead.
I wanted to make a note that I was watching Pro Yaku News on Tuesday, and the announcers there said that home runs have gone up, or were up. By 43 over March and April, the games before Tuesday started over last year, and that stolen bases were up by 59. And I thought, the home runs being up, it's hard to compare because obviously we had the WBC last year, and circumstances are always different. But the stolen bases being up by 59, and they had a breakdown, and it showed that the Marines. Through March and April of last year had just three, and now they have 34 through the same period last year. And I thought that's incredible. That just tells you that...
that is wild.
Tadahito Iguchi, the new skipper, the first-year skipper, has a very different approach to the game. And it's a successful one because there's another team that's doing better than I thought it would be doing. And that's part of it. Remember, I think in the PL... prediction show, I said, look, this is a team that needs basically three hits to get a run, but not if you're going to get a walk and a steal and maybe a sacrifice and then get your hit, or you just knock the guy in, and they're hitting for power as well. So with the home runs up there, their home runs were up as well. So I found that pretty interesting.
Well, I think that is. I mean, I don't know. I certainly don't know that it says anything other than he has a different approach. And using different talent. I mean, obviously, two things is the Marines are instantly a quicker team just by having the younger players, moving two rookies into regular positions on the team. And so appearing to have regained a semblance of his original speed before his four knee surgeries.
Takashi Ogino. You talk about the same one?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, Takashi Ogino, yeah. Although he has 9 stolen bases. He's second on the team. Shogo Nakamura is the guy. He's got 12 to lead the way. But there are guys who appeared in at least 26 games for the Marines. And of those players... the only one who doesn't have a stolen base is our buddy Kazuya Fukuda, who's searching for that 2,000th hit. So the other guys...
he's not looking under the stolen base bag for him.
He certainly is not.
So that's probably why.
Certainly is not. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Another note, well, we're assuming by the time you guys hear this, the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks, Seiichi Uchikawa, formerly of the Yokohama Bay Stars, will have... notched his 2,000th hit against Oryx, probably on Sunday, I'm hoping.
And if he hasn't, our apologies.
Yeah, well, get your hit, kid. And it's a great thing for him. He's a Kyushu kid, so he's there in Fukuoka. To do it in front of the home crowd, I think, would be really good if he could do that. So what do you think about him? Obviously, I think he's probably a borderline Hall of Fame player, but I think he gets in because he's so popular.
That's a good question. I don't know. I haven't really thought of the big picture, but it's always going to be hard. It's going to be easy. And the Japanese, I've talked about the Japanese Hall of Fame. It's difficult because it's so much easier to get in now than it used to be. So the old standards don't quite match up, and which is good because the old standards were created in a game where the competition level was much. I'm trying to think of an example, but if you compared the current NPB to the NPB in the 1950s, it was a little bit like looking at MLB and NPB.
Yeah, there's a...
Where the top talent was the same, but the bottom floor was much lower.
Yeah.
And you had teams, you had a lot of really bad teams, and you had some really good teams. The talent was not distributed as evenly. You had these guys who just ran up incredible performances because there were so many weak, the opposition was so weak. So, you know, you had guys who led in, you know, six offensive categories a year for 5 or 6 years, and they're in the Hall of Fame, and nobody's done that in recent years.
Right.
So anyway, so it's hard to tell, is he worthy, is he not worthy? I don't know, but there are a couple of notable things. I think he's famous for a couple of reasons, and I think he's going to get in for a couple of reasons. You said popularity, but I think also the fact that he's, I think, and rightly so, seen as the leader of this Hawks dynasty. I did tweet this the other day, you know, who's, you know, because he showed up and the Hawks came out of their mid-2000s slump and became the team they are now.
Right.
He's one of two players that win a batting title in both leagues. There's that. So he was it was a huge factor in the Hawks. He was a huge player. He was a big contributor to the national team. And all those things added together, I think, make him probably not a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he's one of those guys. I think you get 15 years of eligibility in Japan, or 10 years. It seems like it goes on forever. So he'll get in the fourth or fifth year, maybe.
Yeah, the odd thing about his career is, remember, he played at Yokohama Stadium for so long, and he has hit more home runs with the Hawks playing in the Pacific League in that stadium before they lowered the fences and moved them in. He has 178 home runs in his career, 99 since moving to Fukuoka in 2011. So,
yeah, he really only had, though, to be fair, he only had 3 or 4 good years with the Bay Stars. He was up and down a lot, and, you know, he had a huge breakout as a second baseman, you know, as a big, tall, skinny second baseman, as a teammate of Tyrone Woods. And, you know, he had this amazing streak, and the game kind of got ahead of him, and he spent a lot of time straightening things out in the minors, and he came back as an outfielder, and then he was back to first base, and when he became a free agent, he became a historic free agent, because he's the first Central League star to move in his prime to the Pacific League.
Right. Right, yeah,
and that was a huge thing.
And he's been really successful.
Of course, he started this parade of Kyushu born players going to the Hawks as free agents. Some successful, yeah. Some not. But yeah, so it's a huge thing. You know, he's really been. You know, if you asked me, what was a big fact? You know, he wasn't the reason the Pacific League has become stronger than the Central League, but he's part of that trend. And yep. He's a bigger figure, I think, than his actual playing stats.
Yeah, he'll turn 36 in August, so he's not one of these 40 somethings who's doing it, so it's a good run by him. All right, moving along, I wanted to talk about Kotaro Kiyomiya, the prized rookie for the Fighters, who on Wednesday smacked a double off the wall in his first at bat on the top team. He was the DH. He batted sixth that day. And you tweeted, and a bunch of other people tweeted, that the hit came off of a pretty good veteran pitcher, if you ask me, to start your career against. It's kind of tough, but Takayuki Kishi of the Rakuten Eagles. And he gave him a chance, I think. Kishi gave him a chance by throwing a fastball up in his zone. But after that, he basically...
stayed
out of the zone with fastballs subsequently, and the Eagles started feeding and breaking balls like they were going out of style. And breakfast, yep. Lunch, and dinner, and it looks like apparently the young fella is not ready to digest them yet. But
yeah, it didn't look a lot like the Shohei Ohtani example in the States. You know, try these fat fastballs. See how they see. First of all, we're gonna try to throw a fastball. Okay, that didn't work. Let's go to the chain. Let's go to Plan B.
Yeah, but I heard one of the announcers on TV. It was Kenshin Kawakami, a former Dragons pitcher, who said they're treating him like a star player already, though, to start what they've doing, throwing him. Breaking pitches, they'll try to buzz him with a fastball, but they always do it either high or off the plate somewhere and try to get him to swing. But he's striking out a lot.
They are.
Yes, but he's young. Everyone's impressed with him. I think it's going to be fun to watch. I love the uniforms. I'm so glad they're not wearing those ugly gold uniforms, and it's great that his first hit is going to be or has been captured in those to be replayed throughout history instead of those ugly gold uniforms. I'm so happy for him just for that.
Okay. I think there's a thing about, you know, how much guys are in the spotlight. I think with the pitchers, you know, how much the hitter is in the spotlight. You know, if everybody's watching what this guy's doing, this is the guy I don't want to make a mistake to.
Right.
Because they'll see me throwing the ball that he crushed.
Right.
That's my pseudoscience take on it. It means it's worth as much as my preseason prediction.
Mine too.
So no. Well, for different reasons, mine were completely random.
You keep hiding behind that big rock there. He got an infield hit today on Saturday and became the third player to come straight out of high school to hit safely in his first four games on the top team since the draft system was adopted in 1966.
And he's up there with some the legendary, right? The legendary guys.
The guys who had done it three times were what's his first name? Osama, his teammate, who's looking for playing time, and then Okada,
the guy with the Cebu Lions,
Okada.
Right? Shogo Okada. Yeah, Shogo Okada. Okay. He came up as a rookie in 2005, and he had 2, 4, 5, 7, 8 hits in his first five games. Wow. That's,
all right. Yeah, I have. Memories of Mr. Okada.
I don't remember that he came out of high school, but there you go.
All right, moving right along, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so we want to mix in the Ichiro talk with fielding questions. So in typical Ichiro Suzuki fashion, he left me staring at the computer screen on Friday here in Japan, trying to figure out what kind of headline to write because he's the king of existential mumbo-jumbo. I've said that before, and this is a cryptic announcement that the team made in which he's not retiring, but he's not playing. He's released by the team. He's taken a front office job in which he's going to work out and stay ready for what? Who knows? I don't know, but he's going to be on the bench sometimes before games and then in the locker room or the clubhouse during the games. It just sounds like he's getting ready to find another team, but they're not releasing him, and even the manager, Scott Service, the Seattle Mariners manager, said the position is going to evolve. I don't know what's going on here. I just wrote a headline and went on to the next story. I saw that you had to write some, or somebody at Kyoto had to write some. I read some of the stuff. I don't want to do his career obituary today because he said he wants to play. And he said, until you see me with a crutch or a cane in my hand, you know, don't assume I've retired. So I don't know what's going on here. I'm thinking maybe NPB next year, maybe the independent league somewhere in the States next year. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, the story, it's hard to tell with Ichiro. I mean, he's got to do everything his way. But, you know, this was the Mariners asking him if he wanted to do it, which I thought was great. So he does want to play in the future. I also would think, well, he's going to stay fit and he's going to be in shape. And, geez, what happens if the Mariners, you know, three outfielders suddenly go out for the Mariners in August? what's this Ichiro ain't going to play this year. You know what they do? They say, get your butt, get your spikes on, dude.
You're working out. You're ready. You're in game shape.
I know. What are we paying you for? Okay. So yeah,
exactly.
I think
that's what we all want to know.
Would happen. Yeah. Well, you know, I've met him. I've talked to him. I don't think he has an aura like people who are paid to say he has an aura say.
You're taking all my good lines. No, I don't want to make it sound like I hate Ichiro. I do not. I really like the way he plays.
He's just what he is. He's really unusual. Oh, I love the way he plays. I love the way he plays, but the fan in me loves the game that from a winning perspective, I always think he's, you know, he was so obsessed and so focused, and he did some things so well that it's just hard not to like. He did entertaining things so well. He did exciting things so well. He didn't do unexciting things particularly well. And I think that was the thing, you know. He didn't like to draw walks. He did in Japan. He didn't like to do it in the States. So it was almost like he wanted to be known as the guy who didn't need to draw walks, you know, until he became a role player.
Mm, yeah.
Then he needed to draw walks to keep a job. So, you know, that was Ichiro. And, you know, you got to do what you got to do, and you got to do what you're comfortable as. So, I got no problems with that. It's just not.
Yeah.
I have minor problems with that. Okay, so let's just move on. But he's got to be different. He's got to have a Zen answer for everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got to do things funky. He's ultra funky, and that's what part of his thing.
Yeah.
And you know what? When I heard all this, I thought. After I digested all this, I said, good for you. You know, you're getting some, you know, you're kind of in a situation, a perfect situation for yourself. If you can play some more and you can find another team, good for you. If you can't and it ends this way, good for you. Everything good for you. I loved him as growing up. I loved him as a young player in Japan. I loved him going to the majors and really showing people. I guess I've written this. The thing about Ichiro was, he did exactly in America what he did in Japan, not quite at the same level.
Mm-hmm.
And people in America who had no access or no interest or just didn't know what they were talking about went, wow, what a shock. How can somebody do this? How exciting. Like he'd never done it before. Like he came out of, you know, he came from Zanzibar not playing baseball or something. Yeah. And I'm watching it all over again this year with Shohei Ohtani. He's doing what he's done in Japan for 5 years and going, wow, we didn't know anybody could do like this.
Yeah. Well, I look at Ichiro and I say he's the shape-shifting peg for which there is no hold, because you can't put him you can't put him in one that he'll stay there and this fits and this is what he is. It's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way he is. And he's cryptic. And he, you know, like you said, he wants to be his own man and do things his way. So that's fine. But you can hardly get a straight answer out of him. And I really don't know what this position that he is in with Seattle. I don't think Scott Service really had an answer for it. But whatever it is, I'm just hoping he comes back to finish his career in Japan and MPV at some point.
I think everybody's betting he's gonna finish his career in Japan.
Oh, I hear all the people in the stateside. I'm sorry, people stateside. I see keep saying that he's done. He's done, and he's not gonna play anymore. And I'm like, you guys don't know what you're talking about.
Well,
that's what they seem to believe. So
I think, and I've heard of, and that's the people in America. The people on this side of the ocean are saying what I think. He's gonna come back. He's gonna start the season next year with the Seattle Mariners. He's gonna play in two games against the Oakland Athletics, and he's gonna retire in Tokyo.
Because those games
at Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, those games are at Tokyo Dome. Yeah, and then
I think he's gonna play in Japan, and that'll be it.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get to the question. It came from Max, our buddy Max in Los Angeles, via Twitter, and he said, "When Ichiro goes into the MLB Hall of Fame, will they give Tuffy Rhodes serious consideration for the NPB Hall of Fame in Japan? #high heat." And to answer your question immediately, I just think if I wish it were a prisoner exchange program or system. I wish they would say, oh, look what they've done for Ichiro. But frankly, one has absolutely nothing to do with the other. So not to mention NPB appears not to care one iota about Tuffy Rhodes. So I don't know. I'm still frustrated. This is a really point of frustration for me. And if I get into it, I'm just going to start saying terrible things about the people who vote. So I can't see how they're going to say all of a sudden that, Ichiro got in Major League Baseball. Let's put in one of the foreigners who did great things for setting role models for a lot of kids. Because we see a lot this year. There are a lot of kids who are half Japanese and half something else who are playing in NPB who probably watched and saw Tuffy Rhodes and saw what he did and said, you know, I can play in Japan and count as a Japanese player and not count against the quota for foreign players. And but I don't want people to treat me different just because I'm only half, you know. And I would hope that he was a role model for those guys, but I don't know. I don't see it happening. I don't remember offhand what the voting was for him this year. Do you have it? I can look it up.
I
don't think he.
Oh, well, hold on a second. Since we're
on it, and I'll look. I do actually have.
Okay. Tuffy Rhodes.
I believe it was
okay.
72 or 68 somewhere. That's the numbers that I.
Well, the votes, the number of votes is changing every year. The number of people, it's going up and up and up, the number of voters. And though I'm disappointed I was not added to the roster last year, I need to knock somebody's head together, because, or maybe they've decided we've got enough members, voting members, we don't need a foreigner who's going to vote for foreign players. I don't know. but Tuffy Rhodes entered the ballot in 2014. He was on his fourth year in the ballot. In his first year, he got 25. You know, the rules here are the same. You need 75%. Your name has to appear on 75% of the ballots.
Okay.
Now, there are players who are off the ballot, and it doesn't count against them because they've decided that there's essentially no chance that they're going to be elected for one reason or another.
Right.
One of those, for example, is now Kazuhiro Kiyohara is off the ballot. He's not permanently off the ballot, but he's off the ballot. Because there's a rule that if you don't get a certain if you're on the ballot and you fail to get a certain percent, I think it's 3%, 2.5%, excuse me, 3%, you drop off.
Okay.
So anybody they think is not going to get the percentage, they drop off. Tuffy Rhodes got 25.6% of the vote. He was on 25.6% of the ballots in 2014, so a third of the way. 2015, 28.5%.
Mm-hmm.
2016, 39.6%. Last year, 22.8%. So he dropped. But here's the thing. What happened last year is unusual because they had two guys who were surefire first ballot Hall of Famers, Tomoaki Kanemoto and Hideki Matsui. And those two guys, although Kanemoto barely made it,
but he made it.
But he barely made it, 75.5%. Matsui getting listed on 91% of the ballots.
Right.
Basically took votes away from a lot of other people.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Rhodes he's still there. And I believe, as I said, it's at least 10 years on the ballot. It might be longer, but it's at least 10 years. I don't know if he's going to get it just because all these guys who are playing more games now, who are playing longer careers, are now going to be retiring.
Yeah.
And they're putting, in terms of historical members of the Hall of Fame, Tuffy Rhodes is overqualified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just by what he did in Japan.
Yeah.
But nobody seems to be noticing that, and we really need a attitude adjustment. And that's my nice way of putting it.
Yes, yeah, I'm with you there. So to answer the question, Max, I don't see it happening. And thank you, Jim, for that breakdown. I appreciate you looking it up there. So they don't know what they either they don't care about what Tuffy Rhodes did here, or they don't want to acknowledge it, or they think it didn't happen.
It's not they don't or they do. It's not enough. There's a majority that seems to think either he'll get in or who cares.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can say, well, he didn't break any record. He didn't do anything. Well, that's because they didn't let him. The players didn't let him. The opposing managers didn't let him, in a sense. So
that's harsh, too. That's a little harsh, but yeah. But
I mean, true to a point, but I mean.
But he was such a, you know, but I mean, when you look at the guys who are, look at the guys who are ahead of him in the. I think, you know, I like all the guys who earned more votes than him this last year. They were Kenjiro Nomura.
Okay.
Who's, I think, going to go in the Hall of Fame. Masahiro Kawai, who was a great player, who probably deserves, but he's a similar player to Tuffy Rhodes. He was a really, really good player on a lot of good teams for a long time. A key player, not one of the better. Yeah, but not one of the best players on his team. You know, he was like the fourth or fifth best player, but he was a consistently great player, underrated player. Shingo Takatsu, Kazuyoshi Tatsunami, absolutely Hall of Fame caliber.
Yep.
Yoshinori Sato, now the pitching coach. I don't think he's going to make it because he's been on the ballot for a long time.
These are players who got more votes than Tuffy last year. You said?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's hard. I see them as all being worthy characters. I think probably the only one of those guys I'd put ahead of Tuffy is Tatsunami in terms of his contribution. But
Mr. Double, yeah,
we'll see.
Okay, all right, we got to go, folks. We will talk to you next week. Thank you so much for the questions. Thank you again, Coco. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.